Hey, it's Jake, and welcome to the Setlist Podcast. This week on the show, we have Jen Lyon. Jen is a precinct captain on NEVA's advocacy team and co-created the New York Independent Venue Association. Those of you who don't know, NEVA is the National Independent Venue Association. And today, Jen and I are talking about what's been done and what can be done to save our stages. Without any further ado, this is Jen Lyon. So you're in the city, correct?
Mm-hmm. Williamsburg.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we talked about that before. Are you guys getting a bunch of snow?
Yes. It's not the worst though.
Yeah, us too though. I think we probably talked about it last time, but I'm upstate and I'm probably an hour away from being completely snowed in and living off of whatever's in my fridge for the next 3 days. So, there's been a ton of negativity about everything in New York City. Do you have any reasons for optimism? How are you feeling about the state of the city you live in?
Such a good question. You know, I think, of course, I'm always optimistic, right? Like, I'm working on shows for fall and winter, and artists are starting to really reach out and know that, you know, at some point we're going to be able to play shows again. So it feels like we're getting closer to some sort of sense of normalcy. I think the larger questions and thoughts are, what's New York going to feel like? You know, I think a lot about who's going to stay, who's going to leave. I feel a little bit like a lot of my most creative and adventurous friends left, you know, they took the time to kind of go have adventures and go other places. So that's interesting. Who's going to swoop in and invest in New York? It seems like there's lots of folks doing that. So I wonder what it feels like on the other side. You know, do we keep, I think we're always fighting now to keep our creative people who maybe don't fit the financial demographic of New York. So that's interesting. And then I think, you know, in the larger sense, in particular with arts and culture, we want to see a better, healthier relationship with the state and with the city to have, you know, more relationship and infrastructure to really support our industry, since we now really understand our vulnerability.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure the struggle between keeping creative people and, the risk of doing something creative financially is only exacerbated by, what's going on with the pandemic and the unemployment situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that was really stick it out. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I think there might have been just a little bit of a lag there. My apologies. I think a lot of people are having a hard time. You know, we're having a hard time before, and then now this happens, and, you know, it's tough in all these major cities to pay rent and all those sorts of things. So, you know, it's only made tougher, or more tough, I should say, by an outside snowball like the pandemic.
Yes, agreed. I think it's been very hard for artists to afford to live in New York for some time. And affordable housing doesn't seem to be something we hear discussed quite often, you know?
Sure.
So it's hard. I felt consistently in the past 10 years, like the college kids don't seem to be staying, you know, as much. And so many of the musicians I work with all moved to LA because they could kind of still be in LA, but move farther out. Whereas in New York, you don't really have that option.
Right.
Yeah, so I think protecting our creative industry was going to be a challenge anyway, and then the pandemic hit. It's more of a challenge. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that seems to be what the organization you work with is all about. Do you guys call it NIVA or do you guys call it NIVA?
It's a good question. So the national group is NIVA, the National Independent Venue Association, and the local group is NYIVA, the New York Independent Venue Association.
Okay.
I got yelled at for that name, but I thought, well, we don't have anything. None of us had any better ideas. And I find consistently we're all too stressed out to brainstorm too much. So we took it. So it's NIVA and NYIVA.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I first had heard about you guys under what seems to be your mantra of save our stages. And then only after looking into you further realized the NYIVA dilemma I was facing.
I mean, these are like the conundrums of forming member organizations in a pandemic. You know, it's not perfect, but it works and it's been great.
Yeah. Oh, well, you guys are having a tremendous amount of success. So, Jen, what is your role with NYIVA/NYIVA/Save Our Stages?
With NYIVA, the national group, I'm the precinct captain for New York. And then for the local group, which is the New York Independent Venue Association, I'm the co-founder, along with Justin Cantor from LPR, of that local organization.
So it doesn't seem like the organization as a whole has been around all that long. It seems like it was a response to everything that happened with COVID. Were there other forms that this took prior, or did this all come together immediately as a response?
There were some cities had venue organizations. There was one in Chicago, there was one in Denver. But the national group, but not many, you know. And in New York City for sure, we did not have any kind of—
Oh, really?
No. I mean, there's a New York City Hospitality Alliance that some of us would fit into, but we're not really like bars and restaurants. We're different, you know, because, well, you know, the crux of our business is selling tickets to, you know, often touring acts or creative acts that have a discipline, right? That kind of is like the discussion of what our difference is. And that's such a specific model because we can't just start back up immediately. It takes a lot for us to get back to whole once we shut down. So the national group was formed out of the pandemic and we all came together there and sort of started getting to work. And the local group came kind of a couple months after that because we realized we have specific needs in New York City and in New York State that only, you know, only we could really understand and fight for.
Sure. Right. I mean, you know, if you've got the kind of the foot soldiers, you know, who are there seeing what's going on in each place. And I'm sure each city and state have their own specific needs, especially one as, you know, diverse. And I mean, the scale of New York City is just mind blowing.
It's true.
So accurate. That was one of the things that I thought was really interesting and made me curious was how quickly this organization came together. And my thought was like, what were you guys doing before? You know, how did this come together so and become this coherent operation so quickly, and what brought all of you together?
You know, nothing was happening before on an industry level with organizing. And, you know, that I think sort of was a function of I want to think about how I want to phrase it. There wasn't structure and organization before. And I feel like that served to keep the industry very cryptic and hard to break into. And, an industry that didn't operate with a lot of standards, you know? So it sort of was a function of the competitiveness of the industry that we weren't organized and structured, if that makes sense. it allowed us to kind of individually be successful. And it's, I think, a huge, you know, because, well, you have to think in the industry, it's sort of Live Nation, AEG, and then independence, right? And that's, and there's other folks in there, but not many, you know? So that's kind of the industry. Well, Live Nation's publicly traded, AEG is a major corporation, and independence, we're all this fractured. So if you imagine that a promoter like me that does 100 shows a year are, like that I'm competing for shows with Live Nation or AEG, it makes sense that in general, the industry would try to kind of not move towards stability, or if you will, or structure, because it allowed that competition to, you know, play out fair or unfair or what have you. So a lot of my reasons for joining NEVA was the long-term goal of seeing our industry become more equitable, become more open to have standards of operation, and just professional standards of professional, you know, a baseline of professional respect amongst everyone, which, and I think what we find is it's a very hard industry for minorities to enter as owners, for women to enter as owners. And I'd like to see that change and shift.
Are you talking about the perspective of standards and things of that nature from opening independent venues, or more from the promotional side that you were mentioning?
I think all along, I think every piece, I think it was very much, it's always been a very Wild West industry where, you know, if you go rogue, you are successful and win. And I feel what happens with that is that, in some ways it keeps certain kind of operators out, you know? So I think in every piece there wasn't, there hasn't been professional standards or discussion, because there just isn't a structure like that, you know? Or, you know, for example, if you're a truck driver, there's sort of a way you operate as a truck driver, and there's kind of a, you know, a level of how you're trained and what the respect level is and how you drive on the road and who you're hired by, or you're independent, right? In our industry, that didn't exist at all. You were like a super lucky individual if you got the money together to open a venue and to book shows, you know? And then you got to decide what was going to happen. Well, I'd like to see something where there's more of a system where investors understand our industry a little more, funding becomes more available, our governments understand funding, banks understand the industry, bookers who book the talent, or the general managers, or any of the individuals involved with the talent, there's more of a system or an accepted way of learning and growing as a professional, as you would in a restaurant, right? There's sort of like a way, right? You become a, that's where I started. You become a, I became a host and then a waitress and then a manager, you know? And if I wanted to take it further, I could go to restaurant school, and then I could get into, you know, we're not going to ever be as big as the restaurant industry, so it's not the same. But I found just personally so many experiences of running into walls over and over again that were walls that there was no way I could break them down. So I know I'd like to see just more growth in our industry based on standards of practice.
So let me try to see if I can understand some of what you're saying, Jen. Is it the big problem that people are having a hard time opening venues? I guess I should say prior to the pandemic. Or is it that having a hard time running the venues or acquiring talent to perform at the venues? Is that,
I don't know,
kind of the crux?
It's not really about a hard time, because it always happens. It's just that there hasn't been cohesion amongst all of the industry in the independent side. So there isn't always, standards of practice, or which isn't necessarily what we're going to get to, but there isn't just, you know, like it's a very, almost very challenging to become a talent buyer in a venue. And then if you get into it, you know, if you need to leave that venue and move or what have you, it's almost impossible to get into another one. There's sort of like, it's probably very much like being an actor or an actress is, right? Like there's a lot of luck. There's a lot of who you know. But what I find in other industries, even other niche industries, is there's just more discussion and dialogue. Like when you're hiring and moving around, when you're training someone to be a booker or a buyer, when you're just having discussion about the way the industry works, it's always, everyone's been in this silo. And now putting us in the same place where we can all have dialogue, you can create some consistency and you can create some consensus. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
I've had women tell me, Black women tell me specifically, I knew I was never going to become a booker in a venue, so I left because I was never going to get anywhere. I've heard that multiple times. I think for me, I see the opportunity of all of us coming together as us being able to talk to each other as business owners and encourage each other to have better business practices, to encourage each other to, you know, all of the pieces, to pay fair wages, to think about how we're increasing ticket prices, to deal with the ticketing agencies. At every level, this camaraderie allows us to up the ante. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. You know, just like I think most people, I have a very limited understanding of the behind the scenes of how these venues operate. So that's why I think it's important to have people such as yourself and people from the organization and organizations like who you work with to discuss how they work, because, you know, most of us just are kind of clueless.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's an odd industry, right? I think it's so particular. I'm trying to think of other things that I think it's like. I think about my job, for example, like a stockbroker in a lot of ways. You know, my role is artistic director of the company and I'm booking talent. So right. I have the creative piece where I get to really think thoughtfully about the artists and the talent and what's good music, what's not good music, what's culturally relevant about this artist. And then I have to hedge my bet on what I think that artist is going to sell, you know?
Sure.
So, and that's the purest way to think about what happens in the industry, because you book an artist, let's say, I'm trying to think of, you know, someone I booked for a long time, Questlove. Well, I've been nice. Booking Questlove for 20 years and I sort of knew what he was worth 20 years ago. And then now I know what he's worth now. And he's a different, you know, very famous person right. now. And the reality of the business is you want to have a great venue where you can keep building with that artist. And you want to have, you know, 200 artists a year that you're doing that with, or 300 artists a year that you're doing that piece with. And you want to make sure that the artist feels good, the audience feels good, your staff feels good. And that's the crux of what's really important about the business is, is this an artist to me? Is this an artist I really want to stand behind financially and take a gamble on and then build a relationship long-term? And then I need, you know, hundreds of those in my pocket
sure.
to make a business. Yeah.
Sure. So what is it that Neva has been able to do over its lifetime here? So I think it got started at the beginning of, you know, or the spring of 2020. And then it seems like there's been a massive amount of success and participation. What are some of the highlights that come to mind?
I think that there's a lot, you know. I will tell you for pure stuff with Neva, because I can't represent Neva, just with the work that I do, but I will tell you from my experience. Obviously organizing to get Save Our Stages passed has been exceptional. That the grant that we got passed. We also right. have
could
started.
You sorry, Jen, could you tell yeah. us a little bit about that, the Save Our Stages grant?
So that grant is, well, it hasn't been released yet, but It's legislation that went through to provide a grant to venue operators, promoters, talent representatives, and museums ended up in the end as well. Mm. And that grant just provides an amount which is based off of our operating revenue, off of our gross revenue. And, you know, what's powerful and interesting about it is we've been closed for a year now, you know, almost a year, yeah. 11 months. And so we've all incurred an enormous amount of all different things, debt or no money, or, you know, we're in all different financial situations. So the way the grant's set up is it's enough to financially help us keep our businesses open until we're going to be at full capacity, which, you know, generally feels like won't happen 100% full capacity till maybe the end of this year.
Right.
Yeah.
So how does the ball get rolling on that? I know a massive part of what you do, or what NEVA does, is sending letters. It's staggering to see how many letters you have been able to send into Congress and the like. How does that get going?
Well, I don't know. It's funny because it's something we all had to learn, right?
Supposedly, I still don't know how to address an envelope, so I'm dead in the water.
I know, right? Yeah, it was really odd because it's not a thing we've all done before, but of course we're all very persistent. So folks, because that's our business. So we worked with a lobbyist, with Akin Gump, and we got emails and contacts for all of our federal reps in our markets. So, you know, so I was working on New York State, and there was another upstate NEVA precinct captain as well. And we just started emailing. Hi, this is, you know, this is who I am. This is what I do. This is who I am in the community. You know, if we could reference some way we knew them or were connected to them in any way, we would. And we're looking to get this grant passed. And so we had a big push outreach individually as captains. And then we also sent out links to all of our audience and asked all of the venues to do the same, to reach out to the representatives. And that was like an email system sort of that like helped us get letters to the feds. And then along with that, you know, slowly, you know, a couple of the senators, Amy Klobuchar, actually, she started drafting the legislation. She had a relationship with Dana Frank. And again, you would get a cleaner version of all of this from the NEVA publicist, who I can put you in touch with too. But this is just my experience of it on the other side.
Sure.
So once all of that piece happened, then we just had to, it was just like a lot of continued dialogue with our federal reps, you know, representatives and senators. And then slowly Schumer came on and became a total champion. And we had a couple of press conferences with him, and he got to know the venues, and he got to know, you know, our group. And then he really became a big, big time champion of ours, and helped push it through, which was great.
Yeah. Yeah. It seemed pretty incredible. And they were basing it off of the income from 2019, I'm assuming, correct?
Yes.
Right. And so were you saying that that has started to move, or has that not yet reached venues?
It's just not released yet. The SBA is working on it. They're going to be handling the grant. You know, part of it, to say also with the lobbying, that I think was interesting was we had to do all this educating of folks, great politicians and our government and everyone. This is how our industry is. This is how tight our margins are. This is why we're important, right? And we have a lot of great information about why we're important in our communities. So there's this education piece. And once kind of folks understood, oh, this is how a band gets to Madison Square Garden, right? If we don't have these guys, it's never going to happen. Then that's what pushed the legislation through. Now the SBA, who's going to be administering the grant, is in a similar process of having to learn the painful minutia of the accounting of our business, which is, you know, it's idiosyncratic, of course, and it's particular. And So it's, they're being thoughtful and mindful before they send out the application because of, you know, I can only imagine there was so much fraud with PPP that everyone wants to be careful and wise, you know? So hopefully it'll come out soon and we can apply.
Awesome. So where, in your opinion, are you guys in, I guess from the perspective of an independent venue, where do you feel like you are in terms of staying open, or what needs to happen to ensure these businesses can survive?
And everyone's in a different place for sure. But I will say, you know, I personally feel like the New York City venues are in a very tight spot. We're also asking for some support from the state, which we'd like to see some reprieve come from the state as well. And I will tell you, some venues sort of are like hunkered down and are all right and can kind of hold on until money comes. And there's other venues. I got an email last week from a venue I book at that said, I'm not sure if we can do this December show you just asked about. We're likely to close. So I feel that we're in this very painful moment of everyone having a lot of fear about closure and debt, and I think we'll know in another 6 months how that shakes out, because hopefully the first grant will come through. Maybe, you know, if we're lucky, the state will give us some support too. And I think we're just waiting to see, but it's hard right now to watch all of our friends struggle and not know what to do, you know. Very hard.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's gut-wrenching to think about some of these staples, you know, across the country that may be gone forever. I wonder what you think. I wonder what you think about if you had a magic wand, or if you had the ability to solve this your way. What do you think that looks like? Obviously, it's a very nuanced situation with the disease and the government and so many different layers to it. But if you could do it your way, Jen, what does that look like?
Well, every situation's different, right? In particular, but I believe that I would like to see grants get in everyone's hands as fast as possible and have it be enough money that venues can stay shut until, you know, we get. And all just in general, venues, you know, large amphitheaters, all of the things, that everyone could stay shut until we can get to 100% or even 75%. That somehow there's enough money to keep everyone closed safely. Because that's the reality of our business, is we won't make money until we're at 75% or 80%, maybe even. Really, right. We don't until we're 100%. So I wish there was a way that we didn't even feel like we had to fight to be open, because it's all financial.
Right.
But along with that goes, then there should also be, you know, very healthy, comfortable stipends for artists. And I believe the government should really start to engage deeper with artists and the arts, as you see in other countries, Canada, Amsterdam, Europe, you know. So many other countries have a deeper connection and systems set up for artists and for arts and culture.
So that's interesting.
I wish there was a way that we had a system that was comparable.
Is there a particular thing from another country that comes to mind? I totally understand if nothing does. I know that's not your area
not
of expertise.
Really. I mean, I think,
I'm just curious.
I mean, I think just that I know that there's grant opportunities that the majority of artists feel comfortable applying to in like countries like Germany, for example,
Right.
Like, oh, yeah, I got that grant. Did you get that grant? You know, there's like a general understanding that artists should receive grants in some way or another.
Right. Just I have a friend who's going to Paris for photography on a grant in the summer. Well, right. dependent, of course, on if anybody can travel anywhere. But if that is the case, then yeah, he'll be going to Paris for photography. So I think that's mm-hmm. kind of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Are there other creative ways that you've seen venues finding a way to make money outside of filling their arenas or their venues? Obviously, it's not going to touch what they were doing when they can have a full house. But is there anything that you've seen that's kind of a outside the box way to make ends meet?
I don't know if there's been anything wild, but there's a group of venues that worked with Lego, a Lego company, to create Lego versions of their venues, and they were selling those as merch, which I thought was brilliant.
Oh, that's sweet.
That's really good. I think some of the merch ideas have been really fun and different, you know? That's been really good. Probably. But I don't know if there's anything that's totally wild I've seen.
Well, the Lego thing is really cool. It became wild
for everyone, right? Like, to-go drinks was a crazy idea. Sidewalk bars was crazy. And then it all became normal at a certain right. point. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, man, when you talk about comparing it to a restaurant, which I used to work in restaurants as well, and I'm constantly thinking about the restaurant industry because the profit margins are so slim to begin with. And then to ask them to provide the same service and do it at 50% or less, it's just like, there's no way.
Yeah.
You know,
that's right.
That's not sustainable.
Yeah.
So to think about to think about that in terms of a venue, which is, like you said, similar, doesn't seem practical.
Yeah. And I think I'd love it if we really could skip the 6 months of like opening at 25% and 50%. And, you know, I mean, it just seems nuts a little bit to try and make that work.
Right. Have you seen any situations where they're able to open at a capacity that makes sense and do it safely?
Yeah. I mean, I think in other markets, we're seeing lots of folks open it. 25-50%. I mean, everyone has to be seated, and I think it's as safe as it's going to be, you know?
Right. Yeah, the question really for me is like, when, you know, do we decide that people are going to have to take on their own risks and things like that to do these, you know, go back mm-hmm. to some sort of normalcy? And I know that can sound a little bit cold and like I don't understand that other people are affected by this, but there are also consequences, as we're seeing, from shying away from the virus or shying away from going back to normal life.
Yes. I mean, I think generally the perspective is that young people are going to come out, older people are going to take some time before they really decide.
Right, absolutely. And I imagine that most of the demographic that are coming to shows, not all of it, but I think a large portion in theory could cover some of the damages, you know, by having the young people come out to venues.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question for you, Jen. How much of the typical audience or, you know, demographic is, you know, young, you know, of the younger variety? Is there a way to put that into a percentage, you know, generally?
Probably not, because you sort of imagine like I do a lot of stuff for the kids, if you will, for sort of like 18 to 35 in mm-hmm. my practice. But then, you know, also there's members like Blue Note and Birdland and Bowery Ballroom who all have like a wide range. So I don't think it's as easy to sum it up. I think the ideal is that people of all ages are going to music. You know, I think that's ultimately what you want.
Of course.
Yeah. So I don't know if there's a total breakdown. I mean, I think festivals, maybe you would find that it's a little bit, you know, younger, but I think it's a range. I think it's a range.
Right. Yeah. I guess my hope would just be that if we could say, all right, you know, everybody, you can go to a concert and you would probably, like you said, see young people that are much more willing to risk exposure to the pandemic. And then the venues could start to fill some seats and breathe a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what's going to happen in the end, right, is like, we're going to have this interim period where we're going to try to figure out how to get people to come see shows. And the fans are going to have to decide what their comfort level is and what it all feels like and, you know, and what it's like to be in a space with a mask on and the singer. And we're just going to have this period of getting back to know each other. And then my sense is, you know, once we, you know, everyone decides, music fans, well, and also all creative arts, right? Because we also obviously have comedy clubs and a whole bunch of other modalities of art. So the fans are kind of going to decide what they're comfortable with. And then I think it's going to be an onslaught. I think people are going to be so relieved and excited to be out of their houses. I think, you know, the generation that, and this is interesting for me, because I have a 15-year-old, is the generation of like new kids who might go out to shows. I wonder, everyone who's been going out to their shows is going to come back, right? After they adjust and think about it and what have you. I wonder, how does the next generation, which is what I'm always looking at, right? The 16-year-olds, are they going to want to come to shows? Because now they spend a lot of their formative time not having that be part of it. So I think that'll be interesting to see, because there's other things coming in. Will live streams maintain, or how will that work? Virtual reality is, you know, was kind of coming in, starting to come into play in the last couple of years anyway. So I think we'll see how it affects life overall in the long term.
Right. Yeah, that is interesting to think about the younger generation who don't have these same experiences that for so many of us, you know, going to a concert when, you know, going to your first concert, it's just like a
formative
experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then maybe the romance of it won't be the same for them.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think it will be, though. I think it will be. There's just something
about it. I
would
hope so, because we're social creatures, right? So you hope that kind of plays in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we need that kind of connection. And I mean, I remember I was at a concert in St. Augustine, Florida. I don't remember when it was. It was a couple of years ago, and it was for the 1975. And there was a point in time where the lead singer, you know, everybody was watching the concert through their phone, and the lead singer was like, all right, enough is enough. Like, we're not playing until you guys put your fucking phones away, and you're going to experience this for real. And from that point forward, everybody put their phone away. The concert was just, there was a different energy to it. And I think the live streams and all that stuff in the virtual concerts are great. But they're a bonus, you know, they're a different way to get close to that, but they're never going to replace the feeling of going to a venue with your friends or making new friends and feeling the energy that can be, you know, transferred from a performance to an audience.
Right. Well, and that energy of standing next to someone who's experiencing the same thing as you too, right? Like, that's also like a big moment, just have a shared experience. So
yeah,
you hope
primal.
Not. Yeah, primal, totally.
I guess we'll see. what do you see going forward? What's the move going forward into 2021 for these venues?
Such a good question. I mean, I think most of us are really booking. If we have outdoor spaces, we're booking summer. Most of us are trying to book fall. And then we're just getting through that. So like having discussions, making sure everyone knows that we don't know what the capacity is. You know, the artists, right? Okay, here's what I can offer you, but I don't know what the capacity is going to be. So when we get closer to the show, we're going to have a reality check about what we're really going to be able to do or not do. Sure. So that's hard and painful. And then we just see what comes. I think it's very scrappy, you know? I think the venues that can are just trying to not get into it because they don't want to have that, you know, it almost feels like a strain and not really what, you know, I had one venue tell me, I'm not going to open until we're 100% because I didn't get into it for seated shows and all of this. I got into it for something else, which I think is valid. So, I think it's going to be it's a little hectic 2021. And then I think the hope is 2022 will be A-okay.
Mm.
I think that's at the moment, I think that's probably the prevailing hope.
Right. Yeah. It's a long time. You know, March of 2020 to 2022.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it's interesting.
It's if nothing else, it definitely is interesting. And I am curious to see the different ways people have adapted and venues have adapted. Were you any part of the Save Our Stages Fest, that virtual concert?
No, I was. I didn't work on that project.
Yeah, it was cool. It was really cool to see all of these musicians step forward and play at these classic venues, even though it's virtual.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally awesome. And awesome to just that artists get it. They're like, oh, right. That venue paid my bills for the first 5 years of my career or whatever, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah. I saw recently a video that Neva put out of Dolly Parton, you know, who,
yeah,
I'm sure cut her teeth, you know, and was saying that she cut her teeth at some of these places and how important they are for artists going forward. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So, do you have any kind of final thoughts or parting words for people who are in your position and what they can be doing now and what they should be trying to do, going forward?
It's an interesting question. Well, I mean, I think anyone who's in the industry should be really trying to work with other industry folks to advocate and to find out what's going on politically, because that's new for our industry that we're really involved in politics. So I think it's an important piece for us all to level up and have thoughts about it. And I think we all should be, you know, reaching out to our local reps, our council people, our, you know, things that if you would imagine, right, that like a really traditional, I don't know, I've been trying to think of like what the traditional organization would be, like a children's theater, for example, right, comes into a neighborhood and talks to every, you know, and everyone's excited and grateful that they're there. This is what I think we need to be doing as venues and promoters. We need to think, right, we're an asset to our community. Let me take this time during the pandemic to introduce myself to every local representative and build relationships and take the time to really build rapport. And the same with your audience, right? How can I connect with my audience right now? Am I creating a fund for my staff that they can contribute to? Are we doing a community playlist that they can add to? I think it's about right now, it's about thinking how to just, we have time and space, right, to operate and do things a little different. We're not just selling shows. So I think that's exciting and interesting for sure.
Right. Have you had any success outside of working with the government, obviously the wheels of government turn slowly. So I was wondering, is there anything outside of that from the, maybe the people who actually make up the community, from other businesses that are maybe doing, you know, some businesses, oddly enough, have been thriving through this. There been any, there been anything outside of, you know, government aid that has been beneficial to the people that you work with?
I think ticketing companies have really been supporting us, which is new, right? Which has been fun to see. Alcohol companies have started to really kind of be like, okay, we need to get in the game and figure out how to support venues. Beverage companies like Red Bull have been really thoughtful. Those are kind of the ones outside of government. I think in general, like we were having a brainstorm the other day about who can we ask for some sponsorship and support. And one of our members said, I'm going to ask the local grocery store, because since I haven't been open, they miss us and they're not making as much money.
Right? Sure.
And we were great. Go ask them, you know, because we need their help. So I think we're constantly evolving and thinking. And I do think a lot of different industries have taken notice. Yes.
Well, there's definitely, you know, all of those places have a horse in the race. Yeah. It's like, obviously Pepsi does better when they're filling, you know, when they're filling venues and people are drinking Pepsi or what, you know, the alcohol companies, all these things. Obviously it's in their best interest to have one of these places where people socially drink or go do their thing to have them remain in business.
Yeah, for sure. It's wild.
Definitely a wild time. Well, Jen, I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking with us. I feel like many people are going to find this beneficial. So thanks for everything you're doing and thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Of course. Yeah. If you have any new developments or anything like that,
yeah, I'll let you know.
To get it out, please let us know.
I will for sure. Thank you so much.
Cool. Thank you, Jen.
Okay. Take care.
All right. You too. Bye. All right. Thanks for listening. And thanks to Jen for coming on the show. If you'd like to learn more about NEVA and how to support, head to saveourstages.com. If you'd like to learn a little bit more about us, you can head to our website, setlist.community. That's where you're going to find all of our previous It's where you're going to find all of our previous podcast, blog posts, and our merchandise. Join our email list if you'd like to be the first to know about our newest podcast, upcoming podcast guest, and the latest to be added to our catalog of merchandise. We got some exciting stuff coming up, so be in the know. Well, until next time, guys, thanks for tuning in. Be good. Peace.